Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm David Marsh. I'm the chairman of OMFIF. It's a great pleasure to introduce Ignazio Visco, governor of the Banca d'Italia, who's coming up to 10 years in his job. He took over from Mario Draghi. And of course, Mr. Draghi is now Italy's prime minister. So there's a direct line linking you, Ignazio, with the prime minister. And that's not the only linkage we know. Welcome to today's session. And we're going to be talking about the Italian G20 presidency, which comes to an end in just a few weeks. It's been quite a tumultuous time, but also a very busy time. And so I'd like to ask you, Ignazio, just in a few words, just to spell out at the beginning, what do you think Italy has achieved, particularly in the area of sustainable finance? And how has the Sustainable Finance Working Group worked out under the Italian presidency? So over to you, Ignazio. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much, David, for your invitation. It's very kind. This symposium is a good opportunity to say a few, to give a few remarks. And I will describe what we are carrying out in the G20 under our presidency on the realm of sustainable finance. There is much more than that, of course. Well, obviously, the urgency of climate change and the disastrous consequences are plain to all of us. We have come through this experience in Europe of the July floods and deaths in Germany and France, the heat, terrible heat in southern Europe that we experienced in August, the Ida hurricane in the US. So there are so many evidence that that really the effects of climate change are felt on Earth almost every day. So this is why really we thought that this should have been a component of our G20 initiatives, a major component. Arresting climate change requires achieving net zero greenhouse gas emissions on a global scale over the next few decades. It is a task which is very urgent, and delaying action is very costly. We all know that. And despite the fact that the COP26 is approaching, and in spite of the widespread agreement on the targets that must be achieved by mid of this century, it seems to me that the actual commitments to diminishing emissions has been unsatisfactory. We started with this observation. The observation is that the UN current nationally determined contributions of all the countries involved, 191 parties, imply for 2030 a 16% increase in global greenhouse emissions against a target of 35%. Reduction, and so urgency is really needed. Now, designing appropriate climate change and energy policies is obviously primarily a task of national governments, but the difficulty of this task and the enormity of what is at stake warrant the full commitment of everybody at a global level. And finance can go a long way because obviously it helps and reinforces the process of reducing emissions if it is done properly. Now, in recent years, sustainable finance has grown significantly. We have seen a market trend in this. Green investments are usually carried out through a different kind of financial strategies. They are typically based on sustainability metrics, all these ESG scores and so on, which are attributed by rating agencies to a broad range of financial investment instruments, say mainly equities and bonds. And they are intended to assess how a company really manages its own operations, trying to minimize the negative impact on the environment and society, while at the same time adopting a set of rules well-defined that basically explains what are the rights, the responsibility, and the expectations between the different stakeholders. Now, notwithstanding these widespread use, these ESG scores suffer from several problems. Currently, there are neither widely accepted rules for ESG data disclosure by individual firms, nor agreed auditing standards to verify the reported data. Moreover, there are clear difficulties in deciding which indicators are relevant to assign in assigning an ESG score, especially when they are compared to financial aggregates like revenues, costs, cash flows, and so on, which are available widely and are all auditable. Now, the agencies that provide ESG scores rely heavily on voluntary disclosures by firms and on subjective methodologies to select, assess, and weigh up individual indicators. As a result, ESG scores of individual firms differ greatly across agencies. If compared, for example, with credit ratings, we have made some calculations. The correlation between the three main data providers of credit ratings are basically around 90%. The ones between those who provide ESG scores are between 20 and 30% across all the companies that are covered, and the difference has been widening last years. Now, the fragility of these indicators and their lack of transparency increases the risk of greenwashing. We may say a lot about this greenwashing, but obviously I think we have to rely also on some evidence, and the evidence is not favorable. There are estimates that suggest that 55% of the firms which are labeled as low carbon or fossil fuel free or green energy have really exaggerated their claims. There are 70% of funds which promise ESG goals which fall short of the targets. Now, minimizing these risks requires high quality, granular, international comparable data. This is the starting point for our work. And among the work aimed at improving sustainable disclosure, we should mention, I think, the work, the initiatives that the IFRS is taking, and they're establishing a sustainability standard board, the technical readiness working group, and so on, with the eminent person group chaired by Jean-Claude Trichet, which we are waiting really clearly for their recommendations. But I'd like to turn to the actual work that we have been doing in the G20 this year. There are three pillars of the Italian G20, as you may know. They are people, planet, and prosperity. Somehow they cover the sustainability. Under these three pillars, the climate change has been one of the key priorities. The cornerstone of the finance tract is indeed the redirection of financial flows to support the transition towards a low carbon and more sustainable economy and society. First step, you mentioned it, has been to revive the Sustainable Finance Study Group. It was a study group at the beginning. Then it was silent for a number of years. Now we have revived it, and we asked both China and the United States, which are the two largest economies, but also the two largest polluters, to co-chair it. And it was very good that they agreed to do that. The group has now been elevated to a permanent status. This means that it will remain over time also for the next G20 endeavors. It is now called the Sustainable Finance Working Group. Now, the group has made rapid progress, taking several initiatives to promote sustainable finance. Now, following the last meeting in September, there have been two deliverables that have been produced. The first is a synthesis report. And the second is the G20 Sustainable Finance Roadmap. They are the result of extensive consultations and transparent, I have to say, even if the agreements have not been always easy to achieve, as you may realize, among all the G20 participants. Now, the synthesis report builds on input papers which have been submitted by the international organizations on three priority areas. The first is the comparability and interoperability of approaches which align investment to sustainability. They have to be strengthened. The second is the information, and there are a number of gaps, informational gaps, that have to be reduced, and therefore also through the reporting and disclosure efforts that are being recommended. And the third is the role of international financial institutions in supporting the goals of both the Paris Agreement and the United Nations Agenda for 2030, the Sustainable multilateral sustainable development goals. Now, for each of these priorities, the report identifies the main challenges and puts forward a set of recommendations to overcome them. You will find this a very interesting also set of suggestions. Then this roadmap is shaped by the synthesis report, and this provides a multi-year agenda that sets a list of actions. These actions should be implemented by the G20 members in order to scale up sustainable finance. Over these years, the roadmap will be able to be adapted to best reflect what will be the priorities of future G20 presidencies. But many countries, for example, we have already seen in the works of the Sustainable Finance Working Group, would like really to add to climate change issues like biodiversity. Now, our presidency has also taken other initiatives to enhance the G20 efforts on the mobilization of private finance. At least three, I think, are worth saying. The first is that we requested the IMF, an international organization, of the Interagency Group on Economic and Financial Statistics to consider climate-related data needs in preparing for this new data gap initiative. They simply were not available. Now we really need to step up our progress in collecting statistics. The second is to consider climate, ask, we have asked reports to basically provide by the Financial Stability Board instructions on how to design the disclosures which are needed by corporations to somehow provide the information to investors somehow can discriminate between those who provide particular efforts in one area or in another. And the final is to examine how this is a cross-cutting issue to scale up digital finance to promote sustainable growth. We actually have also promoted an initiative in which we are putting together proposals to use digitalization for the sustainability to obtain certain sustainability targets. Now, the demand for more and better data to measure the impact of climate change on the economy and the financial system is obviously strong. Now, we have a G20 concept note, which was delivered for the July meeting of finance ministers and central bank governors, which envisages the preparation of a bold and urgent coordinated action plan at international level to further develop existing methodologies and identify, in this case, all the information sources that are already available to gather the necessary data. Information will have to include, in particular, and this is the challenge, more timely and high-frequency data on the emissions, on greenhouse gas emissions, which come from the economic activities, to measure in a better way the environmental risks, and to take into account the possibility of natural disasters. So we have these various kind of risk, fiscal, the physical risk and the policy risk. Basically, these two have an effect, especially on also those who have finance initiatives, and the supervisors have to know all these risks and how they behave on with respect to them. And therefore, more and improved data on climate-related expenditures and transfers will be needed, and a more reliable indicator of green finance. Now, G20 ministers and governors now are looking forward to a detailed work plan that will be prepared by the Interagency Group on Economic and Financial Statistics in consultation with the G20 countries, and which will be submitted to the G20 under the next presidency. So all this gathering of information and production of new timely and high frequency data, and at the same time the comprehensive reports on this will have to be a standard operation by the G20. I'd conclude just saying that sustainable finance, which has grown remarkably in just a few years, is grown so much that we may now wonder whether this growth is itself sustainable. On one hand, scaling up funding for the transition to net zero requires even more green equity and green bonds. On the other, we have to contain the risk of greenwashing, because we can create green bonds which are not green, but rather grey and perhaps hard grey. So this needs clearly better tools to identify, assess and compare the sustainability profiles. The new standards are being drafted in many countries, in many areas, regions, jurisdictions. But what is crucial is to preserve an international comparability. Not easy, and this is there is some fragmentation that is costly, clearly, for companies which are present in various parts of the world, and certainly confusing for investors. Now, the G20 sustainable finance agenda is squarely focused on these issues, I have to say. I found the cooperation really there, true cooperation, even if there are some risks that we cannot deny, which come not from the issue itself of climate change and the need to fight climate change, but on the responsibilities of different countries. There is a geopolitical problem. There is an agenda which goes beyond the climate change. But I have to say that, like the pandemic, climate change is a global issue. And a global issue can only be dealt with global instruments. And this is where cooperation is crucial. And this is why the G20 can tries to play an important role. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you for expounding all that, Ignazio. There's a lot there also about politics. Can I just start off by asking you about China? Mr. Trump is no longer in the White House, so you could say that's a plus point. On the other hand, there's been a frisson now between China and the United States, which might hold us back here. How much influence do you think has this political trouble between China and the United States caused so far for your technocratic working groups? And what kind of shadow do you think that will cast on the future?
Well, obviously, I mean, we cannot deny that there is an issue here. My role is being a central bank governor. And as such, we communicate, discuss at length with the People's Bank of China, with the Federal Reserve, both directly as president of the G20 today, but also as member of the governing council of the ECB. So we meet very often. I think there is a lot of trust. So trust is fundamental. And if there is trust on this side, I think. To achieve. Now, that may condition the timeline. I cannot condition the goals, the objectives, the targets, and at a certain point, the speed has to step up. This is, I think this is a continuous effort. The G20 has been established to deal with global issues since the global financial crisis, right? The G20 was already there, but it became really a crucial component, a crucial player. Now, I mean, I think we have to do all our efforts. Each one of us has a connection with the political system, in the sense it has to, it interacts very much, it gives views. These meetings are co-chaired between those in government and the central bank governors. So this has to continue. There is no way. Obviously, we will see a lot of disasters, as we have seen this year, in the coming years. Sooner or later, this will be so global that really there is no excuse for the politicians really to come up together.
Well, thank you for those cheerful thoughts. Time, of course, is something that we don't have a great deal of. Now, you mentioned greenwashing in quite a few places in your remarks. That seems to be a really serious problem, not just because it damages trust, which you are very right in putting to the forefront, but also you mentioned the three P's, the pensions, prosperity and planet. There's a fourth one, isn't there? Pensions. A lot of people are putting their money into this, hoping that they're going to get some return. Jakob von Weizsäcker from the German Finance Ministry was just talking about that. Surely that's a really crucial point, that you need to have the mass ranks of the central banks and the IFRS and all these people doing some really analysis and doing it quickly on whether some of these schemes are really worth what they say they are.
Yeah. Now, of course, we are very much engaged in all the quarters to talk about the indicators, proper indicators, the taxonomy that is really needed in order to provide the standards. The work that the IFRS is doing is clearly promising, but also, you know, there are efforts. For example, the EU has this regulation, new regulation on taxonomy. Even China, 5 years before, has produced their own principles. The issue is whether these principles, these standards, these taxonomies can communicate one with the other, whether they are can become international. Now, we have to be realistic. It will take time. It is not something of tomorrow. But what two things I think are very important. The first, we use the same classification, both of sectors, industry, investments, and so on. There are international labels that have to be used to identify the same sectors. What we call in a particular way in China, in Europe, and the US has to be the same. And secondly, there are platforms in each jurisdictions that could be developed to which invite other jurisdictions to make them familiar with the taxonomies that each jurisdiction has chosen. There is a platform now in Europe to which the Chinese participate. Now, this is not only something that may induce more harmonization, but certainly provides information for investors from different jurisdictions to understand what is going on in the others. So I think these two points are crucial.
Yeah, well, I've had several questions coming in from the audience, which I'll go into. But also, you must understand that people out there listening to central banks, who are very stately people, they don't often work in a very, very quick way. People like Greta Thunberg, for example, who's visiting Mr. Draghi, I believe, today, who says there's lots of talk and no action. Do you actually understand that, particularly coming from younger people who are going to clean up the mess that the older people have left behind? Do you understand that? And are the central banks really going to accelerate matters now?
Well, the two of us are old enough that we understand them because we listen to our grandchildren. So of course, this is crucial. And we left behind by our behavior a number of consequences. Really we are considering. What are the tools? Because this is to address this issue. And the tools are certainly in the hands of governments. Regulation, incentives for those investments which are somehow facing the target of net zero. The taxation, the carbon pricing, and so on, these are all in the hands of governments. And the issue here is how to provide for them to be activated. Now, one thing that we can obviously tell is that relative prices have to change, because as relative prices changes, also the demands of consumers and producers adjusts. We have seen it already in the early 70s. With the increase in the price of oil has produced a dramatic reduction of the use of oil over time. Not enough, because we are now facing again a major problem, but you have also to understand that with respect to 1980 or 73, when the Yom Kippur wars started, the population has doubled more or less at the world level. So clearly the demand and also the well-being after the Cold War ended has improved and so
on. That is true, Ignacio, but let's just take the increase in the carbon price that people are talking about, the Greens in Germany talking about putting this up to maybe 100 by the end of the decade. How is that going to play down with ordinary people? We saw what President Macron ran into with the Gilets jaunes just a few years ago. Surely that could lead to real stress in the system.
I understand. There will be stress. There will be effects on the economy. We discuss very much in central banks the effects on inflation that come from the necessary increases in the prices of energy, any kind of uses of energy because of this. And this is called a push up that may have an effect. And therefore, we have to consider a monetary policy. But also with care, but also there will be negative effects also on overall prices coming from the transition. The transition could be not easy. So again, the policies have to be aligned. There must be a lot of communication. There are distributional issues here. And as far as distribution is concerned, certainly those who will suffer more will have to be helped. But we cannot avoid having an increase in the price of energy, of this gas and oil.
A couple of questions, if I may, Ignacio, on greenwashing. One of the audiences talked about anti-greenwashing technologies, you know, artificial intelligence and so on, and also a new role for the Financial Action Task Force. Is there not a real role for anti-fraud squads here linked together internationally in terms of this greenwashing problem that you've mentioned?
Well, there is a problem of supervision. Who is the supervisor? Because there are rules for the production of financial information. And there are supervisors in each jurisdiction to deal with that. We need also to define the supervisors for this. This is why I think the taxonomy is crucial. The actions by these core agencies, those who will have to somehow assess the role of these and old corporations in the emissions will need to have the information, but somebody has to guarantee that this information is correct. So you are right. I think this will be the next step at a jurisdictional level, and you will need the supervisors for that.
Another audience member, Kathleen Tyson, who's been around for quite a long time, has seen a number of these bubbles burst over the years. She says that the bubble in sustainable finance reminds her of the fake credit scoring that we saw preceding the 2007 crash with all the CDO squares and so on. Is that going too far, Ignacio, or do you think we could have a repeat of something like that?
I started saying that the trend in sustainable growth perhaps is not sustainable.
Exactly.
Not sustainable, but it is totally different from the complexity of structured finance. This is, first of all, something that at the corporate level, if played correctly, is easy to spot. That is, you use these bonds, these equities, to finance particular projects. These particular projects are well identified. You need transparency, you need information, but this is more complicated at the sovereign level, because obviously you may grade sovereigns differently from the efforts they produce in dealing with this this problem, but in a balance sheet of a country, you will have a large number of expenditures and investments, and therefore you may very well design the emission of green bonds to cover the environmental one, but at the same time, some countries may engage in the production of weapons, of helping tobacco industries and so on, which clearly have nothing to do with this. So that is something that we have to. But you know, these things are starting to be discussed now. Even our efforts, we have a policy of investing in ESG bonds and equities. We have made a major effort in the last 3 years, we have
dealt in the Banca d'Italia.
We have dealt with all these different ESG methodologies. We at the end choose with care how to invest our portfolio. We have invested something like 15 billion, which is nothing small, but it's our own equity. It's not for monetary.
Yes. That's your pension fund and your ANFA funds.
Yeah, and at the end, we have one observation. Obviously, a sample of size 3 is not large, but in the last 3 years, we have much higher return than benchmark and lower volatility. And this is crucial. So we have just produced a sustainable charter, which will define our policies, will help the industry also to somehow get information from us. We will report on the results.
Now, I think a lot of third parties would be very interested in that. We had a fascinating discussion yesterday with Sabine Mauder from the Bundesbank about her third party mandates. They manage nearly 100 billion of additional money for third parties, pension funds and so on. So I think making your expertise and your experience available to outsiders would be extremely helpful.
You know that we are engaged in the European system of central banks, really in the euro system, in defining common approaches to this issue for our own funds investment. We have been discussing also what to do for monetary policy. This is clearly an issue that we are dealing very much with in our new strategy review. We will take into account, you need a lot of more macro modeling. You need a lot more information about the effects on transmission of our measures. You have to know that we have a principal mandate, which is price stability, and therefore we cannot jeopardize that. But at the same time, we will certainly consider whether our investments will produce negative effects or not and try to manage that.
You mentioned inflation, and you say you've been talking about that. Are you really secure that this spike in inflation that we've had in the last few months is really going to return back to a safe level of 2%? Or are you and other fellow governors worried that there may be something in the system which leads us to overshoot that target? We could be heading for a rather uncomfortable bout of stagflation, possibly. How big a worry is that?
Well, first of all, we don't have a crystal ball. So we have judgment, which is applied to evidence and to history. I've lived, as you have, the years of the 1970s and 80s. The mechanisms there that have produced a permanent inflation from the original push of energy prices increasing dramatically, much more than today, are not here. We don't have a widespread indexation. We don't have these extreme changes in the exchange rates. We don't have a substantial pressure on demand coming from the public sector, even if exceptionally now it has helped to compensate for the lack of demand due to the pandemic. And we don't see them to be permanent in the next coming year. But obviously, we have to be very, very cautious. We have been for many years below the 2% in the euro area, and we have to, I think, reach our objective of 2% over the next in the midterm. We will work on that.
But good luck with that. And then a final question from the audience. It really relates to the G20, and it comes back to this standardization. Will the G20 now adopt a common language, which is standardization, taxonomies, and so on? How confident are you that you can get everybody to work together, including the Chinese? And we're coming to the end of our broadcast. So you've got about 20 seconds.
No, I told you, it is not realistic to say that it will be in the near term a single taxonomy. What is most important is the taxonomy speak one to the other, and therefore that we understand the languages, even if they are spoken by which are not our own. That is crucial.
Good. Well, let's end on that. As Winston Churchill said, jaw in sustainable finance is better than war. So Ignacio Visco, thank you very much indeed. And as you come up to your 10 years at the Banca d'Italia, good luck in all that you're doing ahead. All the best, everybody. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.